Good morning, sir. This is Arizona Board of Executive Diplomacy, and you are here today for your parole hearing. Inasmuch as you have been certified by the Department of Corrections for a parole hearing, that is a 412A, 411 home arrest hearing this morning. And that means that 412A is general parole, 412-11 absolute discharge or home arrest, sir. I did ask your name, but did you give me your ABC number, sir, just for the record?
Yes, sir. It's 097687. Last name, Adams.
Thank you so much, Mr. Adams. And welcome to the Arizona Board of Executive Diplomacy. You cannot see us this morning because we're doing this by way of telephone. But there are five board members present to participate in the hearing today. That's the entire board. And they are, just for your information, the Honorable Mr. Ringhouse, the Honorable Mr. Louis Kiwanis, the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson, the Honorable Mr. David Neal, and my name is C.T. Wright. I'm going to serve as board chair as well as panel chair for your hearing this morning, sir.
Well, thank you very much, sir. We appreciate it.
Okay, and I would point out the fact that you do have a number of supporters in the room as well, and we will call upon them at the appropriate time. So I believe we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, at least 7 supporters. I might have missed 1 or 2, but you have at least 7 supporters in the room this morning, sir.
Well, I so appreciate you being there. Thank you very much, sir.
Yes, sir. What I'm going to do at this point, sir, is I'm going to share some information that I have gleaned, and you can feel free to correct any information that I have. And let me just indicate to you that the information that I will be sharing with you basically will come from Ames, as well as from the pre-sentence report and other documents that presented to the board that the board had an opportunity to review. And I will start off by pointing out the fact that based on the information that we have, you're serving one offense, and that is murder in the first degree. And you began this sentence back on January 19, 1992. You will become parole eligible on July 12, 2018. Well, that means that if the board decided to return you to the community on parole or home arrest, it would not become effective until July 12 of this year. And just want to make sure that you understood that, sir. And I would point out the fact that based on information that I've gleaned, that you also had another sentence, and that was for aggravated assault, and with that one you received 15 years, but that one has already expired. Am I correct, sir?
Yes, sir.
I also take note, based on information that I've gleaned, that this is your first time coming before the Arizona Board of Executive Diplomacy, sir. Is that correct, sir?
Yes, sir, it is.
And I do take note that the board has had an opportunity to review your Institution of Progress report, and you have taken a large number of programs since you've been incarcerated, and I'm just going to ask you, I'm not going over this whole list because the list is part of your record, part of the documentation that the board has, but what's the most recent program that you have taken, sir?
Well, the most recent class, we don't have them down here. They don't have too many classes down here. And most prisoners, you got a life sentence. So the last one that I was in was a program we created down off in Yuma, which was more for like a mentorship. We helped people mentor, teach people mentors and mentorees down in Yuma. Those were like the life skills. We call them like life skill classes. And a couple of us got together and just helped other people out around the prison.
Okay, so in other words, and I'm asking a question, it may sound as if I'm saying, but in other words, that you work with young inmates to help them so they won't commit the same offenses and end up being reincarcerated, is that correct, sir?
Yes, sir. I have instructors that work here. We didn't have enough time to put this all up in here without me being able to find the rest of my certificates and things like that, but I'm definitely down as an instructor off in the mentor program, and that's what I've been doing for a while now.
Okay. Now, over the years, and I don't know, maybe because you all have this situation, life sentence, have you had anything dealing with with entry and programming at all, preparing you to come out.
Yes, I have all my papers right here. I've been through most of the day treatments that they've got here. I've been through, there's not a program that's been in prison that I haven't been in at least five times. I've completed every program available, as well as helped, as well as instructed most of the classes. So I kind of try to stay, I'm trying to be institutionalized. I just try to figure things out for myself and try to put myself in the best position to help people out in here. So that was the only thing that I could do to try to better myself and try to put myself in a position to help other people.
Okay, sir, and I do take note that you indicated in your release plan that if you are released, that you wish to reside with your mother down in Casa Grande. Is that still your desire, sir?
Yes, sir. This is my mother and my grandma lives across the street. It's not in too good health, so that probably put me in a position where I can help a little bit more.
Okay. And we also take note that you already have a job lined up in landscaping upon your release.
Yes, sir.
You have a large family with great family support, and I think that as I started to state, you have a number of them here. So well, how did you line up this job for this landscaping job for, sir? Is that going to be down in Casa Grande, sir?
Yeah, it's going to be down in Casa Grande, as long as the work is pretty much where the work is, so it's pretty much around Arizona, but the work part is just the company that he has. It's just something that I know that I can get right into, and the things that I like to do is just, I like cleaning, so, those are two things that I like doing. I like cleaning, and I like just being put in a position where I can utilize my skills.
Okay. I also take note that you indicate that you plan to go to college and take some classes part-time to finish your degree. And what area would you be studying in college, sir? What would you be studying, sir?
Right now, I have one in psychology. I've got one also in theology. And lately, I've just been working on my math. I'm trying to get my math back up to where it needs to be so I can finish my curriculum off of my custodial classes. I got some custodial classes that I still need to be addressed. I'm probably a few credits short of those. So those are a couple of things I want to try to get out and get done as soon as possible.
Okay, sir. I'm going to make an assumption, and I may be wrong. Do you already have your GED, sir?
Yes, sir. I have GED. I got 3 degrees. I'm pretty far as well. That goes, I'm pretty good. My mom always been taking care of myself as far as education goes. So I've been pretty smart for a while. I mean, I kind of just do everything I can to just put myself in a better position, a better position than I've been in. And that's everything I've tried to do since I've been here. I ran into my fair share of problems. This is prison. I did come there when I was a juvenile. I've been here since I was 17 to 44. So I ran into a few bumps and bruises along the way. But for the most part, I've bounced back from each one of those and still try to be a better person.
Okay. Now, speaking of bouncing back, and I need to get some help from you on this now, I do take note, one of the disciplines back in 2016, you had this major for possession of drugs. You also had a major possession of, I guess, communications or something. You also had a major, all this is in 16, possession of drugs again, and then you had another one, attempt to commit. So what was going on in 2016? Why do we have all that major?
Well, in 2016, I'm pretty sure you can probably talk to the counselor here or the deputy warden that was here. Well, when they moved me down here, they moved me in the cell. We can't get who we want to be in our cell. If something's found in the cell, it's both of yours. It's how they call it, it's a common area type place. So when a two-man cell, they come there and find something, they're charging both persons. So, but the people here know who's it was, they know what was going on, the model study, they got all that, they know what was his, they gave my business back. So that right there in 16, I think the one you're talking about was a conspiracy. That was somebody that was sitting in the hole with a broke jaw, couldn't come back to the hole, pretty much asking somebody else to collect some money for him. That's pretty much what that was about.
But what was your involvement, sir?
Well, they broke off in the 16 one was they put my name in there. The first one was the one with the communication device and the dope. That was my old cellies, and they already know that. The deputy warden and the people that was here, they already know who that was. He already claimed responsibility for that. My my role in the majority is just being here. But if you're here, you're a part of it. So I mean, if you're in the room with someone else, regardless of what's going on, that's both of yours. So that's how prison conduct works in here.
Yes, I've heard that before. But I guess the one that I'm really concerned about, and I really need your help on this one, because I believe it's at least twice in 2016, and that was possession of drugs. What was that about?
Yeah, that was the first one. It was the same ticket. Those are the same ticket. It was a communication device and a drug ticket. Those were together. That happened on the same day. Those were often, they know about that in here. They know who was the deputy warden and the I-9s up in here. They know who that was. They know what happened with that incident right there. That was the incident that I was just in the room. That was just happened about me. I'm in the room and there. Like I said, they find something in the cell with you. It's both of yours.
So what was in the room, sir? It was a phone,
and I think it was like a few things of, I wanted to say it was heroin. I don't even know exactly what the drug was. It just had a drug on there. My medical number said it was heroin, because that was my old favorite thing. That's what he did. You know what I mean? And that's just, anybody here, I'm pretty sure I'll tell you, but up in here, it's a little different up in here. It's just, you and you had the mercy of in the cell with you. So that's just all I can really say on that.
Well, sure.
But every year, though, you got a counselor right here, the deputy warden, and the I-9 over there. They know all about all of that here.
Okay, let me just ask one other question as it relates to discipline. When the last time, or have you ever, or maybe that would be a better question, have you ever used drugs since you've been incarcerated, sir?
I have. That was like when I was first came down. I felt like in my first 10 years when I first came down, I was still smoking weed. I was still being rebellious and all that stupid stuff. No, I haven't had one of those in at least the last 14, 15 years.
Okay, so
I just left it all alone. I'm just tired of it.
Okay, I'm just going to make a few other comments because we must move on for time management purposes.
Yes,
I do want to make a few other comments because this is the first time that this board, the five of us have had an opportunity to speak with you, sir. And
okay.
We're just trying to get to know you better. And I really want to go back to the fence itself, according to information that I believe that I have. And again, you can correct me when I'm wrong, that this offense took place back on January 15, 1992, when some Casa Grande police officers, they were dispatched to where a shooting had taken place, and as a result of that, you were identified as the person or one of the persons that was involved in this. In fact, the victim had been murdered. The officers arrived. He was laying on his back near the apartment, and then later a female witness did make a statement that you had shot the victim three times, and the victim was carried to a Maricopa County Hospital where he was pronounced dead. So far, is that information correct or incorrect?
Yes, sir. Correct with that.
So let me ask this. What was your relationship, or if you had a relationship with the victim? What was going on there, sir?
Well, I knew the victims. You know, the victim's family is actually from Beloit. My grandma, actually, the night that this happened, was actually watching his kids. You know what I mean? So I knew everybody that was involved in this right here. I wasn't back in Arizona 11 days. So I've been gone but 12 months before this happened, so I guess whatever had been going down there kind of brewed up to a halt. It brewed to a head, and you know, because I tell myself all the time that if I wasn't there, it probably wouldn't have been happening, because I think other people try to act different when other people are around. I think that's what ended up happening that night. I think I was there. I think it kind of like escalated everything to a. It came
ahead. So about 12 months or so you have been away. Where were you?
Yeah, we were out in Texas. Me and my mother, she should be in there right now. We were out in Texas probably about 11 months. I probably wasn't back in Arizona about 11 days before this happened. I've been gone for like 11 months.
So your family had, some members of your family had relocated to Texas,
yes.
And then you Then you came back. When you came back, you had been there for 11 days. Were you coming back to reside in Arizona, or was this...
No, I was actually coming down to check on one of my kids, checking on one of my kids, and I was going to just go back down that way, but things never happened. Never happened like that. It didn't happen. But that was my intention, to come down and spend a little bit of time with my grandmother, my kids, and stuff, and just go back down there with my mother.
I believe we were working on, well, let me ask you this way. Were you a juvenile at the time when this murder took place, sir?
Yes, sir. I've been here from 17 to 44.
Okay. And so what were you doing with the gun, sir?
Well, the gun happened at that. The gun just happened to was there that night. I was there. The other dude that was there was the guy that happened. I had seen the gun that night that was there. I got the gun that night.
So why did you get the gun, sir? You said there was another person's gun, so how did you end
up? Well, it was a big altercation. For me, it was a big altercation just leading to one person. My goal was to take the gun, was to stop the stuff from happening. That was my goal, to take it from the dude who actually was going to use it. And that's how I ended up in possession with it. And when I walked outside, I walked right into everything that they had been going into, whatever thing that they had been going. You know, however long that they have been going through, I guess they're messing with the same girl, whatever the case may be, but however long it took for them to get to that point right there, when I ended up coming back there, I was literally caught in the middle of it.
Okay, now I think you answered the next question I was going to ask, and then I'll go to the board members. So what was this all about? They were fighting over something?
They were fighting over a girl, and I just happened to walk into it, and I just happened to be there one night.
But why would you get involved? So you say you didn't have a gun, so you took the gun, or somehow you ended up with the gun from someone else who was there. So how did you end up being involved? So you just walked out, and they were fighting?
Well, sir, what happened was that we were all there first, and that's what I had to do, the victim in the case. We were all there just hanging out. When dude ended up putting up, that's when the other person was talking about what he was gonna do. You know what I mean? So my thing is, I didn't want to get caught up in the middle of all of us. I knew all of them. So I grabbed the gun. I know the easiest way to eliminate a situation when you got two people who say that what they're gonna do is take away one thing that they want to use. So I ended up taking the gun. When I walked outside, I walked right into the victim. And that's where everything just went sour from there.
Okay.
I did have possession of a gun. I did take the gun and try to eliminate the situation, but end up walking right into it.
Okay, sir. And I might have another question, but with time management, I'm going to yield to other board members at this time to see if they have questions for you at this time, sir.
Yes, members?
I don't. Oh, yes, I'm going to Ms. Rittenhouse.
Thank you, Dr. Mr. Adams,
yes, sir.
Just on this, the offense itself, the reports that we have indicated that the victim was shot not once, but three times. But the fact is that, or the report says that he was shot once, and then when he fell was when the additional shots were made.
Yes.
Why did you continue to shoot when he had already fallen?
Actually, ma'am, what ended up happening was I'm the one who I actually shot him the first time, and the other dude came back and shot him the rest of the time while I was on the ground. That's where the discrepancy is enough in the whole case thing. I shot him, he came and shot him while he was on the ground.
How did he get the gun from you?
I dropped on the ground. As soon as I shot him, the dude dropped him on the ground, he picked the gun up and shot him three more times. That's in the paperwork, that's in the police file, all that's in there still.
That is actually contradicts.
Yeah, my dude is across the street named Wayne Rogers, as you got a thing. He pretty much lays out everything that happened that night.
This report indicates, sir, that you proceeded to shoot him two more times.
I can't, I couldn't hear you, ma'am.
The report says that you are the one who shot him more times.
Yeah, I shot him the first time. That's been our whole fight this whole time, ma'am. Me and my family is there. We've been fighting this whole time.
Another question for you, and it's back to this... this discipline for drug possession. And the report we have says that the drug was found, a dime-sized package containing brown tar-like substance, was not found in your cell, it was found in your pocket.
No,
It's found in the right front pocket, or right pocket of inmate Adams. That's what the... So this is the one that you said was paired with, I believe was the same day as the other one about the cell phone?
Okay, yes, ma'am. That was, well, actually, we didn't have clothes on. We had sweatpants on, so after they came and found the Western Collar, they found the pair of pants. And they were his, and they know that now. Like I said, they gave my business and everything back from them. And he had actually told them that was his and everything like that. But my old studies, and like I said, once you get caught with something, that's something you're causing yourself, or something to leave in there, so you both are responsible for it.
All right, thank you.
That's how that turned out.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. Honorable Mr. Corliss, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Wright. Can you hear me, Mr. Adams?
Yes, I can hear you fine. Thank you.
Just a couple of follow-up questions. Regarding the original offense, was anyone else arrested with you?
No, actually, there wasn't anyone else arrested.
Second question is, I can see you've done a lot of programming, and I commend you for that. It's quite a list. I noticed in your discipline history that in 2014, you had 3 tickets for refusing the program, which sounds funny considering how much you programmed. So,
yeah,
I was just going to ask you what happened in 2014.
I'll probably answer that fast without you going there.
Yes, sir.
When they use it to refuse the program, but they're refusing a housing unit move. Because they had a state called Ebola. I'm not sure if you guys know anything about that, but they keep like about 3,000 people in there with no break, and so there was no give. And I already told them over there that I couldn't sleep or nothing like that, and they ended up moving me back to another yard. They moved me to another yard, but then they kept trying to send me back to that yard, and I couldn't see that. And that issue's up on there, like the last 4 or 5 tickets, all those tickets right there with the refusal to house, the refusal to move, the refusal to program, those are dealing with. Because they gave me like 5 of them in a row, back to back, and they came every day. And was like, well, you're going back over there, and I tried to explain to them this, and I just came from over there, I can't sleep over there. I mean, I had a good job over there, I had everything over there, I just couldn't sleep over there. And so when they ended up moving back to the other yard, they tried to move me back over there, that's why. The refusal started coming up. But it wasn't a refusal program. I literally instruct most of these programs. And that's why I mind my best. That's what I'm helping other people. So I definitely wouldn't deny a program. That helps me.
Yes, thank you, sir. And thank you for your response.
You're very welcome, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Mr. Kalanis. And a further question, Honorable Mr. Johnson.
So I had a couple of questions. I want to first go back to In 2015, the package that was found in your pocket, which you said it was your inmates, but I'm looking at the reports and I'm gonna read it to you. And it basically says that possession of dangerous drugs from 12:31 at approximately 11:10 hours during a pat search, the officer located a dime-sized package containing a brown tar-like substance in the right pocket of inmate Adams.
Okay, well, we got that name before again, but that's who my that thing so that they can try to go out, clear this up real quick, because that's definitely different. That's not what happened.
Okay, that's the question, because it actually says it was a PAC search.
Yeah, I know, that's why, but when you said it, you just told me right now, and that's why I'm asking the mayor, he's still for, because the dude who actually was there that day, he's still here, he's like the police of the police, you know what I mean, so he's one, I talked to him the other day, and he's trying to figure this shit out, so he pretty much has asked me if I need some type of clarification to let him know. Because I read that on there, and I was trying to explain to him before we got here to this point that this isn't what happened. He's like, yeah, somebody else wrote the report. But he's around somewhere. He's the police, the prison police, the police. That's pretty fair. But that's what ended up happening. They ended up coming in there, just grabbed our clothes, we took out to the shower, they searched clothes, and they found the it's in a dime size with the paper.
That's
it was mine, but it wasn't mine. We didn't have clothes out of my sweatpants.
But they found you guilty of that, is that right?
Yeah, they found me both guilty of it, but I'm not sure if they took mine off, but I know he got found guilty of all of that. My attorney got found guilty of all of that.
Okay, let me ask you a question. I'm going to go back to the night this incident occurred.
Okay.
And I heard what you told Dr. Wright, and the reporter says that when you were a gang member, of course, at that time?
Yes, I was, sir. I was out there in the streets.
Okay. Were you on parole as a juvenile at the time that this happened?
I'm not sure if I was or not. Probably that my mom there. It was about that 27 years ago. So
a long time ago.
It was a while ago.
So it says that, yes, it says that you were absconder as a juvenile, and you were on parole as a juvenile at the time that this incident occurred. So I was not clear on exactly what happened during the shooting. Why did you shoot this young man? It just wasn't clear. And we don't have, you know, the police report. We have.
Right. This is actually 1,000% of what happened. It's just, like I said, I got caught up, and me being there escalated this. For one, it's because I was a little different than everybody else. I didn't have a problem. I knew how to fight. I knew how to do all that stuff. But this, I just walked like into my whole thing. This, soon as I got there, soon as he pulled up, his whole conversation from when I walked out that house was about the female and the dude in the house. Didn't have nothing to do with me. The conversation got outrageous. It got out of hand from him out there dealing with me, you know, and someone else in the house. I didn't have no problem. I wasn't messing with the female. I wasn't doing any of that. Them two had a problem with the female. It was their problem. I got caught up in the middle of it for being there.
Okay, so
that is 1,000% fact.
So what was the problem they had with the female that you were trying to, as you say, resolve? I'm just trying to in my mind what happened, but I'm not quite getting a clear story from you of what occurred.
Well, what ended up occurring that day was just, I guess, from the time that I wasn't there for them 11 or 12 months, I guess, things had started escalating a little bit more, probably from, you know, back in the day, they probably would have been a fight. You know, you got 3 or 4 people with you, they'll probably try to jump in or something like that, whatever the case may be. But when I came, this is my first time being back in the grace with all of those. I knew all of them. Like I said, I knew a female, I knew the victim, I knew another person, I knew everybody that was involved in this, you know what I mean? So I was the one that I thought that me being there, by me taking the gun, that I could probably stop it from escalating further, I would say, because like I say, back in the day, it would probably just be a fight or something like that. Back in the days when I left, it would probably have been a fight or something like that.
So what was the argument? What was the argument over? Was it the argument over?
What do you mean over here? This micro and all this stuff. Just weird stuff. Just stuff that just took place. It took off fast.
Okay.
And I mean, it took off fast. But it definitely was something that wasn't planned. It was just something that happened. Like I said, I honestly believe if I wasn't there, it probably wouldn't happen. But that's just me just looking back over things.
Okay. So, according to the pre-sentence report, what I'm understanding is that only you and the victim were the ones outside arguing. It didn't indicate anybody else was outside.
Yeah, they came out after the first shot.
Okay, after the first shot?
Yeah.
Okay, and somewhere in the pre-sentence report, I thought I read something that said it was the first shot who actually killed the victim. Is that right, or do you know?
I don't know, but I'm sure a gunshot of any size could play a role to that. So it could have been a fatal blow. We're just not sure. But I did know that I did play a role off in it. I did have something to do with it. So I'm not sure what bullet actually killed him or not, but yeah, that definitely happened.
Okay, so there's one witness in this thing that says that they were outside and they were pleading with you not to shoot the victim, and you proceeded to shoot him two more times while he was on the ground.
That's the female from the case who's trying to protect her dude that I had been here this whole time for. And that would be her name, which was Pam Williams. That's the one who said that. That's the other dude. She's the one that was involved with both of the dudes.
Shooting, but you, and although it's the female, is saying that you were the one who shot the victim and then shot him two more times while he was down on the ground, and you're saying that no, you shot him one time, dropped the gun and ran off, and then somebody else came out, picked up the gun and shot him two more times, and
yeah.
So that's a contradictory in the statement, and then there's a contradictory in what you're saying. Although that may be cleared up at a later point, it's contradictory of what you're saying about the narcotics that was found in your pocket during the pat-down. But that situation is different. And so I'm having conflict with what you're saying and what's actually in the written information that we have before us here today. That's what I'm
saying. I understand that. I can see where that would be. So I can see a little bit. I can see where that would be a little bit throwing you off. All I can do is go off of what, you know, I've been in here doing it, so from the beginning, I know what happened from the beginning, and the only thing I can say as far as in here is just try to get in touch with the people that was actually there. I mean, the people actually felt the stuff, and then I think that probably give you a little bit more clarity as far as what you're looking for right now.
Okay, so what, nothing happened to these other guys who allegedly were the ones who brought the other two together?
Well, he's been in prison, I know it has something to do with the other girls again. No, again, I just don't know the guy. I don't know about him that much no more, but I know he's been in prison. I don't know exactly what it was, but it wasn't on this case. It definitely wasn't on this case. I'm pretty sure when she looked out, there are some moms off in there. I'm pretty sure the court's paperwork will probably show a little bit different than probably what's right there. But this was something over almost 26 years ago. I definitely played a role off in it. I've let everybody down, my entire family. Most of them done passed since I've been here. I just want to come home, finish taking care of the rest of my family. Just try to become a back into society. I just want to try to adjust myself back into society the best way I can.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Further questions, Mr. Neal?
and follow questions by board members. At this time, we are going to support it, but before I go to support it, let me just ask this question. Is there any victims in the room, or as it relates to this? You are the victim side. Okay, thank you. So what we're going to do, we're going to support this first. They will have an opportunity to speak first. Then we'll come to the victim, and then we'll come back to Mr. Adams. So that's the order that we go. I'm going to ask, you know, I do take note that we have at least seven, if maybe more than seven right now, supporters in the room. I'm going to ask that you would limit your testimony, and I'm going to suggest around 3 minutes, because I want all of you to speak who want to speak, and the board wants to hear what you need to say. I'm also going to ask that all of the supporters, as well as the victims, remain very professional. I'm going to ask that we not get into any type of confrontation, anything of that nature. This board is professional. This is for five board members who are professionals, who understand, and don't make that determination based upon information that's been presented. The other thing that I will point out, the fact that we are not retrying this case. It was tried back in 1992, I believe. Therefore, this is not a retrial. We're only trying to make a determination whether to release Mr. Adams back out into the community on parole or not to. That's our job. It's not to come back and retry the case. So I'm going to let the supporters, I don't know who want to speak first. As I say, I counted at least seven. So I'm going to let you determine who would want to speak first or who will speak first. And I'm going to ask that you limit your testimony to 3 minutes. And I'm also going to ask that you not repeat what somebody else has already said. So at this time, supporters, it's all yours.
Yes,
you checked.
Okay.
Okay.
Sorry.
Good morning, ma'am. And would you state your name for the record?
Good morning. My name is Tanisha Cherry.
And welcome to the Arizona Board of Executive Tennessee. And what do you want to tell the board today, ma'am?
I just want to talk again about my cousin. I actually majored in criminal justice, and I do believe in the justice system. And I sat in that court in 1992 doing those trials. The big change for me is that he had a hard life as a child, and this crime was committed when he was a boy. A fatherless child is tough in this world, and we come from a small community, and both of these families are very close-knitted. In fact, the victim's mother, Ms. Sweat, her sister, Tallulah, is actually my godmother. So this is a very close-knit family. He was a boy. He made a bad decision. He's now a man. It's been 26 years. He has children, as well as a victim. And I believe that it's been enough time that he served. There's consequences when you make bad decisions. And I believe that time has been served for that consequence. And I would like to see him home. I would like to see him back into society. I put several years, I'm currently going to do my master's, and I would like to be around as a mentor to him to get the support that he needs, as long as I support my aunt. All I can say is back in 1992, there was two families impacted by this decision, two mothers, several family members, and I respected the decision of 1992. I was not there when it happened. I have heard several stories. I actually was at court when Mr. Jesse Turner showed up to the court, and he was actually in a orange jumpsuit, so I believe he was incarcerated as well, and he pleaded the fifth, and they put him back in the truck, and they took him away from the courtroom, so I don't know why he pleaded the fifth. So I do believe that there may have been multiple people, but again, I was not there. So I'm standing here on behalf of my family, I'm standing here on behalf of my cousin, and I'm telling you that I would be willing to invest with him and look and see what kind of opportunities that I can also get him involved in. I would like to see him. Like I said, I understand that there is a victim. It's a very, very tragic situation. My grandmother is ailing, and any support that she could possibly get from this would be good as well for him and give him something to focus on. But I do know with support that he can be a better person. I do know that if he's given that second opportunity, I will be there to support him as well. So I just want you guys to take that into consideration.
Thank you so very much. Board members, any questions? Any questions? Thank you so very much for coming this morning. Who's coming up next? Good morning, sir, and welcome to the Arizona Board of Executive Committee. And what is your name, sir? And what do you want to tell the board this morning, sir?
I just want to say, being my dad, I didn't have a dad coming up. Grandmother, I was raised with my grandma. She raised us all well. My dad has been there through, my illnesses have said he helped me through a lot on the phone, calling from prison and helping me get motivated and pursuing stuff. And he's a very supportive father. And I couldn't ask for another, dad. I'm 26 now. I was barely born when this happened, I guess. But I can say is if you guys do give him a second chance to get out, I can help him also. I work with CDI, it's Community Bridges. They help with veterans and finding housing and people who get out of prison and to get on their feet, fund them. Also could play a big role when he gets out to help him with the new society, and I know he's been in prison all these years. So yeah, that's just it. We're giving my dad a second chance and please let him come home.
Thank you so much, sir. Any questions? I see no questions. Okay, who's going to come next? Good morning, sir. Would you state your name for the record?
James Delway.
And welcome to the Arizona Board of Executive Committee. And what do you wish to tell the board today, sir?
I've known Mr. Adams for about maybe 10 or 11 years old. So I've known him quite some time, his whole life. I know the situation that got him in there. I know he was young, he was dumb, but I would say at least a year after he's been there, I've stayed in contact with him from that time till now, in 25 years, I would get advice from him throughout the years, maybe when we were in our 20s. He never, he always stayed really sharp. He had remorse for the situation. He knew that he left kids behind, family behind, friends behind. And even to this day, I know that he just wants to get out. He's got a large family support. He's got a job. He's got a place to stay. And speaking with him, knowing him back as teenagers when this incident happened, and knowing him now, there's no way that's the same person. He wants a second chance. I've been 25 years in prison. It's a long time. And I do believe in second chances. That's a change, man, 100%. And he still has my support. And there's no way he can go on that same path. He doesn't sound like the same guy who committed that crime. It was all a shock to all the friends. Got heard about it after the fact, the family. But he's definitely not the same person, that kid that committed that crime. And it was the wrong place at the wrong time. It wasn't really none of his business. But that's what happened. And I know for a fact that he's definitely a changed man. And I believe in second chances. He's got kids that he wants to be a part of. He's got a grandmother. He's got a lot of family over here. So hopefully you folks take that into consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any questions? Thank you so very much, sir. Who's going to come up next? Good morning, sir. Welcome to the Arizona Board of Executive Committee. And what is your name, sir?
My name is Arthur Williams.
And Mr. Williams, what do you want to tell the board, sir?
I'm his uncle. From what I recollect from this, that's all How much time is enough? I mean, I don't speak, we speak eloquently. I know that he's changed, he's a man now. And he made some dumb decisions as a child, but as a man, I see him as a man. And a man amongst men, I think he would fit in.
Thank you. Any questions? There are none. Who's coming up next? Good morning. Welcome to Arizona Board of Executive Primacy. And would you state your name, ma'am?
Brittany Harper.
And what do you want to tell the board this morning?
I can't say what happened 27, 25 years ago, but as a man now, he is a different person and a changed man. And as far as changing, I had not one but two uncles. One did 19 years in Arizona, and another did 37 years in federal. And when they got out, they were totally, different, became just before in the past. And if he can be a role model and talk to the kids or whatever in prison, out here, why can he not do the same and help young men not to be in the same position? So I would say, forgiveness is not for you, it's for another person. And I think everybody deserves a second chance.
Yes, ma'am. I want to make an assumption, but let me make this assumption, and please correct me if I'm wrong. You are his wife, am I correct?
Yes.
And how long have you been married, ma'am?
I said fiancé. Fiancé.
Fiancé.
Yes.
So how long have you known him, ma'am?
2 years.
2 years. Okay. Yes. How did you get to meet him? I guess.
My best friend's sister.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions, board members?
Mr.
Johnson.
So you said that you had two family members, one that was incarcerated for 19 years, and one that was incarcerated for 37 years. So what, are they still out, or?
Well, my uncle was deceased, and the other one is still out, basically in New York. I have a very nice job. Never went back, and I'm not saying like that, his kind of very more gruesome than whatever Mr. Adams had going on. And they were responsible citizens, had no problems, got married, kids, and basically lived my life.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions? Hearing none, thank you so very much. Yes, sir, please come forward, sir. And welcome to the Arizona Board of Executive Primacy. And what is your name, sir?
Richard Adams.
Mr. Adams, what do you want to tell the board this morning, sir?
Well, I just want to say, that's my younger brother. I'm the oldest brother, Mr. Adams. Of course, as the oldest brother, you do what you can to try to steer people from going, down the wrong path. I've got two brothers, It was a difficult time. But there's a lot of people, like my cousin said, that were affected by this. It's not an individual effort on my side of the family. We're actually very close to all being the same family, to be honest with you. Now, one thing that I do know with me serving in the military is that I know integrity. I know that this guy is definitely not the same guy that went in over her 20-something years ago. He's a whole different changed guy. From the rehabilitation programs, all the programs that he's done, this is a complete different guy, and I wish that I would have been there a little bit more in his life. Like I said, over half of it was taken away. I had taken away from what he did. I'm not saying what he did was right. But at the end of the day, I just really want the board to consider he has a family too. He has young ones. And again, he has a family too. I just want you guys to really understand that. So appreciate you guys taking out the time today.
Thank you, sir. Were you in the military when this crime took place, sir?
No, I wasn't. Shortly after.
Shortly after. Okay. Thank you, sir. Any further questions?
No.
Okay.
No.
Who's next? Good morning and welcome to the Arizona Board of Executive Primacy. And what is your name, ma'am?
My name is Dorothy Williams.
And what did you want to tell the board? Yes, ma'am.
My son didn't make a bad mistake. And I would 2 days from Texas when this happened. I was trying to help the detectives, everything I could do. I feel bad, really bad, what happened, because I knew Anita, I know the family. You know, it devastated everybody. But I really feel for her, because I'm a mother, and I was like, it does, he's her son, no matter what. And I feel bad for her, I really do. My son has been 27 years. Jesse Turner was the other guy. And he, my son did shoot him and take off running. Jesse did finish it. Detective knew they put him, he wouldn't say anything. They let him off. They let him take the fifth. They was okay getting anybody, but they didn't get everybody. So my son has paid the price for both. Jesse Turner should have been involved. And I talked to the detective, so we can't find him. I said, well, I just seen him. Every time I seen him, I would call him, go talk to him, go get him. They wouldn't. What my son did was very wrong. He should have no part of that. He should have had no part of it. He was on probation. He was joyriding. He shouldn't have been involved in that. And he doesn't. What he did, warranty, whatever, he's paid. He's paid his time. We can't drag anybody back. All I can say is, all the families were involved and definitely hurt, devastated. I followed them and wouldn't have it. There's nothing I could do to stop it because I wasn't there. And there's nothing I could do to bring Mr. Hampton back. And I wish I could, but I can't. But I love my son. And I was very close to him. So I knew the family. Go away anyway with them. Son, young, stupid, not understanding life, but he understands it now. It hurts me deeply for what happened. Miss Sweat, we don't speak. And I wasn't there. It hurts me because I know what she feels. Because I lost him. I lost my son. But yeah, he's alive and he's in prison. But I lost him. And I feel so bad for her. And I mean, we used to speak. I've been to her house. And we broke up all friendship and everything. And I understand that. But I'm saying my son do deserve a chance. And I personally will be there for him. I've been there over the years. I will not stand here and say he was right. I would never say that because he was so wrong. But he is my son. Unless you bring a child in the world, you can't just walk on me. What can you say? I hurt. And I feel so bad. I couldn't change it. I couldn't do anything to change it. I'm really deeply sorry for what he did. But he wasn't the only one. And then I would put my life on. I know who the second guy was. And I know my son took off. And I know Jesse turned to finish it. The thing was between Jesse and David. Pitman should have been involved in it. But being stupid, he did a bad mistake. But how much is enough? I can do nothing to change anything. All I can tell you is that I love my son. I hate what he did, and I can apologize. I'm deeply sorry, but I can't do anything to change. With that, I ask you guys to do what you feel you have to do. If you do, release him. I'll be there supporting 100%. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Any questions for board members? Thank you so much. Thank you. Any other supporters wish to speak at this time? Any other supporters wish to speak at this time? Last time, any other supporters wish to speak? Thank you. As I stated up front, now we will go to the victim's side and again, as I said up front, let's all be professional. We know that this hurts, but we have to be professional and we certainly appreciate it. Ms. Mooney, do you have anything to offer or should we just let someone come up, ma'am?
Just, we were speaking to
Okay, please come forward, ma'am. executive premise seat.
Thank you.
And what is your name, ma'am?
My name is Anita Sweat Hamilton.
And welcome to the Arizona Board of Executive Premise Seat, Ms. Sweat. And what do you want to tell the board this morning, ma'am?
Well, you know, I appreciate you guys letting me speak here today. I've been pondering over this loss of my son for this 25 years. And I just wonder what happened that night to him. What happened to him? Why he's not here? Mr. Allen?
Yes, ma'am.
Has...
No, sir, Mr. Allen. Be quiet, sir.
Yes, ma'am. Has given me three letters. And from what I hear right now, it's different from what this is saying. I just opened these last night after 25 years because he told me the truth on stage. Very arrogant about it at that. He said, you want to know the truth? You got it. I don't know if I got it or not. I don't know if I'll ever get it. My son had a 2-year-old son at the time, as well as Mr. Adams. He has children. My grandson is incarcerated at this time, and he had some very hard issues with the loss of his father. I'm not here to continue Mr. Adams being in prison. That's what my heart tells me to do. But I want Mr. Adams to tell me what happened to my son that night, because he's telling a different story than what this says. I had to ask the victim fight people to stop him from writing me. I never opened these until last night. So I can help make my decision and try to do the right thing. Yeah, he's been in here 25 years. My son will never come home. Never. I do believe in second chances. But I want to know if a second person was involved. Why did he take his life for 25 years to cover someone else? I don't understand that. If I was involved in a murder, and I know someone else, I mean, they're all involved because they're all there. There was like 5 people. My son approached their apartment. They were all inside, according to Mr. Adams, drinking and smoking dope. My son had a .02 liquor in his system and a taco from the toxic thing that he's in. He was called over there. I believe he was set up. They were celebrating Mr. Turner's birthday, which they didn't get along. And the thing about Mr. Adams is, my son brought him to the house one day, maybe 2 weeks prior to him getting killed. And I said to my son, what are you doing with him? They don't like you. He said, Mom, you're tripping. He says, we made a truce. I said, you trust that? He said, yeah. Well, so I'm getting some insights on what was going on with the group. What moment should always get you killed? But he trusted him. And I feel good that my son left this world thinking that Mr. Adams was his friend, that they made a truce. Whether Mr. Adams made a truce with him or not, or Mr. Adams was getting him in a situation to lure him in, because I still don't understand to this day why my son went over there when Ms. Ruth Williams called him over. And there was testimony to that. And everybody's in the house. Everybody's drinking. Everybody's smoking dope. Mr. Adams says to me that he walked outside and my son was there. My son supposedly said to him, I don't know why you're hanging out with Jesse. He's a bad influence on you. He got angry, Mr. Alex did. My son got angry. He thought my son had a gun, or something had a gun on him, and he shot him. Now, whether he shot him once, twice, three times, I don't know. That's where Jesse Turner's supposed to come in. I don't know. But the thing that struggled me about Mr. Adams on the most terrible day that happened in our state, our country, is 9/11. If you guys would go back to his record, he was acting out that day, being disrespectful and not obeying. If you look on his report, I happen to look there every once in a while. I would go and see what's going on with him. Mr. Adams could be a changed man, I don't know. When I hear that Doak is still involved, and I hear that he shot him three times. My son Arn was totally taken off his body. Totally taken off his body. They shot him, whoever shot him, in the heart, which he bled inside. He only lived probably 20 minutes from the shot. He begged for his life. He asked for help. And out of those four or five people, they just let him live there. That's heartless. Somebody should help. From what I understand, the people in the neighborhood, I talked to a gentleman across the street. He just got off of work. He saw my son laying on the floor, on the ground, excuse me. He called it the 911. Well, my son was dead on scene. There was no help for him because he had no one there that loved him, that cared about him. Even the so-called girlfriend, or woman that him and this other guy was dealing with. And I don't understand why Mr. Adams was taking his life and sit in jail, prison, for 26 years for something he said he didn't do, or is the murder part. There's something saying that he shot him in the arm, and Mr. Turner shot him while he was on the ground. Mercifully. I don't know who did that. I was in my bed asleep. So, does Mr. Adams deserve a second chance? Has he changed? I don't know. I hope that he has. And I'm leaving it up to the board. Because I'm tired of the burden. I can know the family. And as we went through court, I know I'm supposed to take three minutes, but it's my son I'm talking about. It's my loved one I'm talking about. He was a great guy. He was. We have issues, don't get me wrong. Kids are all have issues, but he was a great guy. I got letters, I got flowers sent to my job. If I could bring all that stuff to you, you would be amazed what he did for me as a child. I miss that. I really do. But I do believe in second chances. I believe in the board to decide, what do you guys think about Mr. Adams? If he's still dealing with dope, this world is so sick with dope. Just sick with dope. And people are killing every day. Every day. Cass Grand Police officer told me that his evaluation at 16 years old, that he would kill someone by the age of 29. That's what they told me. I don't know. But I'm not going to judge Mr. Adams anymore. I have hateful things for him. As I get older, forgiveness is what I need to do so I can see my son again. But I'm going to leave it up to you guys to determine whether he belongs on the streets. And that's all I have to say. Thank you for listening to my episode.
Thank you so very much. Any questions, board members?
Thank you.
No, I don't see any questions from board members. Thank you so very much. Anyone else from the victim? Anyone else? Victims? anyone else victims? We have no one else from victims at this time. Board members, we will go back to Mr. Adams for his final statement. But are there any questions in the board members have for Mr. Adams at this time? Honorable Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Adams, I know you've spoken on it before, and you've had an opportunity to hear, you know, your supporters as well as the victim's mother speak. So, sir, in your own words, tell me how you would convince me that you have changed.
Well, for one, sir, I'm going to go out the outside of my comfort zone, but I just want to tell Miss Webb, I'm definitely deeply sorry.
You can speak to me, sir.
Well, I've been here, like I said, I've been here from 17 to 44. I took part in everything that's available in here, as well as created a different program that could probably help them with mentorship. I've lost everything. I mean, I've literally lost everything. But I also know that there's nothing that I can say or do to take away what happened. I just been here just doing my time, just trying to get through this time. We fought this all the way along the way. I'm still very, very remorseful. I'm sorry that things happened the way they happened. I was young. I can't keep using that as an excuse, but I'm 44 now. I live with a family that's out there that I still like to try to get out there and try to assist, try to help out, and just try to make myself better, just try to, some way, somehow, try to make amends and try to move forward.
So,
that's all I can try to do.
So, tell me how you would handle confrontationally different than you did at 17, now at the age of 44.
Well, one thing I learned while I've been here, you can walk away. Back in the day, it really wasn't like that, considering we, well, can't be for real. I say me and I was in the streets, and I was supposed to be somewhat tough, and walking away was the last thing anybody would want to do. But now it's more of, I have to be able to put myself in a position where if something's going wrong, I've got to be able to walk away. I have to be able to not put myself in those positions, regardless. And I can. I mean, that goes from working, that goes from staying away from places that people don't like to go, which may be church, which may be a program, might be doing things like that. There's different things that I want to do that I know that put me in a better position. That's just staying out of trouble, trying to stay out of the way, getting a good job, programming, and trying to stay in church. That's what I can. That's the only way I know that'll keep me away from things, is being able to walk away from things. And that's something that I learned while I'm here. You know, just walk away from things. I walk away from things. Things aren't that important no more. It's about trying to be better. It's not trying to be a part of crowds. It's not trying to be a part of any of that. It's about trying to be a man. And that's what I'm trying to do. Trying to own up to my mistakes in the past and trying to do everything I can to put myself in the best position to be the best person I can moving forward.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you so very much, Mr. Johnson. Any further questions for Mr. Adams? I want to ask you one other question, Mr. Adams, because you mentioned this at least twice or maybe three times. You said you've been fighting this all these years. What do you mean by that? Have you been fighting in the court system?
Yeah, I've been fighting in the courtroom. We spend an excellent amount of money. The last thing we want to see is, the whole thing being about this whole case, and it's just as been. This person say this, this person say that, as far as this, not so much the facts, so we've been spending money buying different lawyers or whatnot, just trying to get down to the facts of things that we never got around to, and that's fighting. It's not like I just been just laying down here doing nothing, because this case was, it was a lot different. It was different. A lot of different things came up.
Okay, you'll have a chance to explain that in your final statement. But let me just ask one other question. I was not going to ask this, but since you mentioned money, have you paid the family the restitution at all, sir?
No, I didn't take it at all. I'm not sure if they did it, but that's what they've been taking it all since I've been here. So I'm not sure if the family rest you've been getting it or not.
I understand. Okay, any further questions at this time, board members? Hearing no further questions. So we're coming towards the end of your hearing. At this time, we want to give you an opportunity to make a final statement to the board before the board goes into discussion and makes its decision. So anything else you want to tell the board, sir, without repeating yourself?
Yes, sir, thank you. I just want to say thank you for this opportunity to come to this board. I mean, I've literally been here from 17 to 44 years old. I have pretty good family support. I'm a hard worker. I just like to leave with the Bible verse from the Bible, 1 Corinthians. And when I was a child, I was thinking like a child. I put things away so now I can see things a little clearer. And that's how I would like to do it. And I just really appreciate this opportunity to get out and try to be a positive member back in society.
Thank you so very much, Mr. Adams. At this time, the board is going to go into discussion. If it sounds like we're talking to you, or we're talking to your supporters, or we're talking to the victims, or any others who might hear us, but we're not. The five of us are just talking among ourselves. This would be the first time that the five of us will have the opportunity to discuss your case, because we do operate under the open meeting law. And whatever we do, we must do it in public. We do not go behind closed doors. As the board goes into discussion, we're going to ask that you remain on the phone, because you will hear everything that this board will say. We don't have anything behind closed doors. Everything is done in the open. So at this time, the board is going into discussion. We're going to ask that everyone will remain quiet. And once again, I'm going to ask that, because this can be, it might be, an emotional situation, that we all remain calm as the board goes into discussion and renders its decision. The board is now in discussion. I find Mr. Adams to be a very interesting individual. He speaks well, he articulates well. This is a situation that took place back in 1992. Which he's told us, I think, five or six times, that when he was 17 years of age, and something was going on. For whatever reason, he had his life had, up until that point, based on information that I mean, he had had a number of problems with the legal system at that tender age, by the time he was 17 years of age. Between 1989 and 1991, if I counted them correct, I was 13. I'm not saying he was guilty of all of them, but 13 charges that we found on the record, which means that he had been pretty tough out there in the community. I do take note that he has tremendous support from his family, and we want to thank his family for coming today to participate in this hearing. I further take note that we do understand, at least I understand as one board member, the concerns of the victim, and I want to thank the victim for coming today, the mother for coming and speaking to the board also in a professional manner. Now, this board has to make a decision. That's just some concerns that I have, and I'm only speaking as one board member. We cannot speak for each other. My first concern goes back to the offense itself. So many contradictions. We just don't have. Everything is not being told to the sport at this time. then we're gonna jump around contradictions as it relates to those tickets. There are just some contradictions. Where did the drugs come from? How did the drugs get there? Mr. Adams has the ability to justify everything. But just as, and I'm going to end at this point, but just as he ended his statement with a quote from the Bible, I will end mine as well. To know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. No contradictions. I just don't feel that we've got all of the truth at this moment. But I speak as one board member. Now we'll open it up to other board members. The Honorable Mr. Kiwanis.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. I want to begin by saying that I appreciate all of Mr. Adams' programming and release plans, plus his family and community, part of the community support. And I'm hearing some very good things about his rehabilitation. But I have concerns about the story, his personal accountability, discipline, and DOC. And frankly, I don't think the issue of a second suspect changes Mr. Adams' culpability in the incident offense, although I know we're not here to retry the case. All I'm saying is that there seems to be no question he's involved in the shooting incident. And at this point, I don't believe Mr. Adams is ready for supervised release. And I will continue the discussion from there.
Thank you so very much, Honorable Mr. Kiwanis. Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse.
Thank you, Dr. White. I agree with you, Dr. White, and with Mr. Kiwanis. My main concerns are around the continued discipline. And I've read the Ames package very carefully. And there was continued involvement in drugs, and to the point where contact visitation was denied because of drugs. Continued, there were other tickets in there besides the ones we discussed that involved investigations where it was, you know, investigated and Mr. Adams received a ticket. So I think he has continued to pursue that in the prison. Whether he's pursuing it today, I don't know, but as recently as 2016, which is pretty recent in the scheme of things. So I agree with you. I do not think he's a good candidate for parole. So.
Thank you so very much. Any questions there?
I'm agreeing with my colleagues at this time on the issue of tickets. He hasn't had one of his injuries since 2016, but that is in totality of it and the repetitiveness of it. That's just not enough time once he goes down, so I mean that it's not going to happen again. And I'm uncomfortable with the explanation of the shooting itself, too. That we have says that he committed the entire crime and so we don't have per se, we have nothing else going on that. So I'm not comfortable with the case at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. Almost Johnson.
Dr. Adams, first of all, I just want to thank both the victim's mother as well as Mr. Adams' mom for coming down and testifying. I would tell you that I think both of them gave very sincere, heartfelt testimony, and both deeply remorseful and sorry for what has occurred, and taking the opportunity for expressing a desire for believing in second chances. I just felt like I just wanted to just thank them because I think they both gave some very heartfelt testimony about what had occurred and not trying to make any excuses for any of them. I do want to say that I'm conflicted. I think that Mr. Adams could I just have some problems with the story, according to the information that we have. There was nobody else outside. But regardless to whether someone else was outside or not, it would be fired the other two rounds. According to the report, it's the first shot that caused the death. So Mr. Adams has admitted to firing that first shot. And I know there's controversy if someone else fired two more rounds, there's controversy, but that first shot was the intended shot according to the autopsy report that was actually filed and information that we have in the report. And then the incident, the continued use of drugs, you know, I think that according to Mr. Adams, if his statements are true, then he would be able to come up with some information, not now, but at a later time when he comes back before this board, if those drugs were not found in a pat-down search on his personal property, in a pat-down search, if he was cleared and released of all of those, as he stated it, that his cellmate stated that those drugs did belong to him, just according to what Mr. Adams has said. He said that that stuff has all been cleared up. I'm not familiar with who was in what cell or what, but the incidents according to the information that we have, it could have been that another inmate was in the cell, but it all refers to the cell of inmate Adams. And whether someone else was in that cell or not, it really doesn't say. But I think that leaves a great way for me, a long way for me to fully believe and understand that Mr. Adams is being truthful when he presents the information to the board and not making excuses and accepting responsibility for his actions at this time. So, as Mr. Adams has the capability of proving those things, like he said that the actual CO who was there during the time that this incident was there could verify and substantiate his information, then I would be more happy to believe his information if he's able to prove that when he has an opportunity to come back before this board.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Any further discussion by board members? Hearing no further discussion by board members, I shall offer a motion. It's not easy to offer, but I must offer it anyway. My motion is very simple, is to deny Mr. Adams, Jr., ADC number 097687, to deny John Perot absolute discharge or home arrest, and that is my motion.
Second.
Okay. Agree. Motion by myself, seconded by the Honorable Mr. Neal, agreed by the Honorable Mr. Johnson, agreed by the Honorable Mr. Kowalis, agreed by the Honorable Mr. Rittenhouse. And this incident took place in 1992. I'm going to recommend a 1-year set-off. Any objections to a 1-year set-off?
I disagree. I really would like to see him come back in 6 months, because I'd like to give him 6 months the opportunity to come back and verify the information that he has told us about the possession of the drugs been found in his pocket, and that produce some evidence to substantiate his story that he was completely exonerated and his cellmate admitted that those items belonged to him.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Let me go down the roll now. Should he have a 1-year set-off, starting with Ms. Rittenhouse?
We could do the same thing in a year. I mean, he could bring the items back in a year.
Mr. Kowalis,
I'm sorry, with the one you saw.
Mr. Johnson?
I probably do the 6 months.
Honorable Mr. Neal?
Well, I would be 1 year set-off.
Okay, that would be a 1-year set-off. And release type for denied was a 412A, 411, home arrest. That is John Perot, absolute discharge of home arrest. Reasons for denial, serious and deeming offense, loss of human life, serious and deeming offense. Although the victim died skills that was given to the victim. Although all of them were quite young, but it was the age of the victim as well. We do have a release plan. We do have family and community support. I'm also going to check, unless I hear otherwise, from board members. And I know one has to define what recent means, but in my opinion, recent should be at least 5 years, and mine is going to be recent disciplinary infractions since the last one was in 16, so I'm going to check that one unless I hear otherwise from other board members. And I'm also going to check the violation of previous probation or parole, because he was on probation at the time of this offense, according to information that I gleaned. Anything else that needs to be included? Nothing else to be included, Mr. Adams?
Yeah, can I make a comment on that right there? I understand when you saw my own secure thing like that, can I make a comment on that?
No, sir, the comment will not be heard on that when that's already been predetermined. But did you understand what the board has decided, sir?
Well, hearing denied until a year.
Yes, sir, you'll be certified. That's what I was going to say just a few moments. You'll be certified by the Department of Corrections in about a year. It may not be exactly on this date, but about a year from now, you will be certified by the Department of Corrections to appear before this board again. Once they have certified you, they're certified, then this board will place you on this calendar, and you will come before the board again at that time, sir. Any other question? You understand the reason for denial, sir?
Well, no, I don't. I don't. But I mean, you got the door, so I can't do nothing but let me accept that and just keep going. But all I'm trying to just understand is I'm already a year over that time anyway, just for ERC dates. I'm extra, literally, an extra year over my time right now because of the ERCs that I can't even earn. I can't earn time, so I can't take time that I can't earn. So I'm
waiting
right now,
a year
over the board.
Sir, I'm going to suggest very strongly, sir, that you take that up with your CO3 and let him discuss that with time comp. I'm not going to get involved in time comp, sir, at this time, sir. So please take that up with your CO3 or CO4, and then they can get you right on the time comp. So that will be a determination that they will make. Well, this is going to end the hearing, sir. Thank you so much for your participation. I want to thank the family on both sides for your participation, and this is going to end this hearing. And Mr. Adams, you'll be kind enough to put the CO3 back on the phone. I will certainly appreciate it. Thank you so very much. And I'm going to ask that the family and supporters, if they will exit out of this door here, which I call the north door, and I'm going to ask that the victims, if you would exit out this door, and everybody please remain very professional as you leave this building. Thank you so very much. The hearing is over. And the board will take a 5 minutes recess.